Well, good morning. And if you were here last week, let me just say I'm surprised you came back. If you were not here last week, let me clue you in. Last week I started a brief two-week series on money and giving, and that's why I'm surprised the people who were here last week are here again this week. Money is one of those topics that's a little uncomfortable for us. We typically try to avoid those conversations. We stay away from that topic, especially when it comes to money and giving, giving to church or giving to charities. We tend to just avoid those discussions altogether, but Jesus talked about money a lot. Jesus understood that there is this direct correlation between our giving and between our spiritual condition. And so Jesus talked about money a lot because he understood that at the end of the day that it's not primarily a financial issue, but a spiritual issue in our lives. And so we see Jesus talking about money all throughout the New Testament. And last week we looked at one of those key passages where Jesus says there is this correlation between what you give and your heart for God. And Jesus says, where your money goes, where your treasure goes, there your heart will be also. And so we looked at this very practical step of how our financial giving can actually draw our hearts to God. This week, we're going to take this just a step further and a little bit deeper and look at a passage that's found in Mark chapter 12. This may be familiar to you if you've been in church for a while. Let me just set this passage up. This event takes place during the last week of Jesus' life here on this earth. What we're going to read in just a moment likely happened on the Tuesday before Jesus was crucified on that Friday. These events take place in the temple area. Jesus spent his last week in and around the temple area. He spent that time teaching his disciples, or these men that were technically the apostles, these 12 men who were following Jesus. And in Mark chapter 12, we see Jesus and these 12 men in the temple area in the court of women. Just to give you an idea of what it looked like, this was the temple area back then. The court of Gentiles was this large area outside of the temple proper. In the court of Gentiles, basically anybody could go there. Roman soldiers, anyone else, anyone who was not Jewish, they could all hang out in the court of Gentiles. But around the temple proper were these 5-foot walls going all around, and those 5-foot walls had signs on the walls that said, "Go no further." They were written in Latin, in Greek, and in Hebrew, and basically said, if you are not Jewish, do not go any further. If you do, we will put you to death. I mean, they were serious about it. Gentiles, non-Jews, could only be in this area. The temple proper was 9 feet above the court of Gentiles. And so you went up all of these steps, and you entered into this area, which was called the court of women. Not because only women went there, but because this was as far as women were allowed to go. They could go no further and enter into the inner temple area. They had to stay in this particular part of the temple. All around the court of women were these boxes. There were 13 wooden boxes, and on top of the boxes, there were these shofars. A shofar is a ram's horn. It looks something like this. They would take the large end of the shofar, and it would be pointing up and out, and the more narrow end would be connected to the top of this box, and that is where people would come and give their offerings for the temple. 13 boxes scattered all around the court of women, and people would come in, and they would drop their coins into the shofar. The coins would rattle around in the shofar and then drop into the treasury box below. I'm a little embarrassed to show you this. This is a crude Photoshop, but I could not find a good drawing of what this would have looked like. So I know that's bad, but the coins would have gone into the top there. You get the idea. And then rattle around and go to the bottom. Now, here's why they did it this way. We tend to be very private about money, and we tend to be very private about giving, especially when it comes to giving to the church. You know, it's just between us and God. It is this private matter. The Jews did not view it that way. It was a very public thing. They would come in, and the priest would stand by the box, and they would come, and they would drop their coins into the box, and the coins would rattle around in the shofar, make a bunch of noise, and then finally fall into the bottom with a loud thunk, fall into the treasure chest below. They viewed giving as a very public thing. Much like today, if you give to a college or some charity, and if you give a certain amount, they list your name and some sort of printed material, and it says you're part of the silver circle, you know, or maybe you're part of the gold circle, or if you give above $10,000, you know, you're in the platinum circle. You know, they recognize all of their givers. That was the mentality. You know, it was a very public thing, and so wealthy people would come in, and they would take their heavy silver or gold coins, and they would place the coins into the shofar, and clank, 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 rattle, 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 and the coins would fall into the treasure box below, and everybody would say, "Oh, wow, look at that. Look how incredible he is, and look how generous he is. He just gave all of that money." So on this particular day, not only was, you know, did you have the priest there and all the people in and around the temple area, you know, watching people who would come and give, on this particular day, as people gave their offerings, Jesus and his 12 disciples were watching as well. Here is what they witnessed. This is Mark chapter 12, beginning in verse 41. Jesus sat down opposite the place where the offerings were put and watched the crowd putting their money into the temple treasury. Many rich people threw in large amounts. But a poor widow came and put in two very small copper coins worth only a few cents. Okay, so stop there. Get the picture. It's exactly what we described. Jesus and his disciples, they're watching, and here come the wealthy folks, and they take their coins and they drop them in, and clank, 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 and everybody says, "Wow, look at all the money they just gave to the temple treasury." Then this woman comes along, a poor widow. Mark tells us that she drops in two small copper coins. They were called leptons. They were the smallest coins that were made in Israel during that time, both in size and in value. Tiny little copper coins. Very little value. It's hard to compare exactly how they would equate in today's dollars and where we live, but two pennies would be a pretty good guess. You know, pennies are, you know, if you're walking along and you see a penny on a sidewalk, you have this debate, is it worth bending over to pick up the penny, right? Because it's just not worth that much. And that's how these coins were. They were not worth much. And so these wealthy people would come in and they would take their coins and they would place them into the shofar and clank, 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 and a lot of noise, and everybody would hear it. No one noticed when this woman came in and put these two coins into the shofar that barely made a sound. I mean, no one would have heard these two coins rattling around or clanking around. It just, the sound would have been so slight. No one would have noticed what this woman did. And as far as the temple treasury was concerned, made very little difference, if any measurable difference at all, in the temple funds. They did not suddenly decide they were going to start a temple expansion because this woman came and gave two coins. No new ministries were started. It was barely a blip on the screen as far as the temple treasury was concerned. From earth's perspective, it did not mean much. But from heaven's perspective, it meant a lot. Notice what Jesus said. Calling his disciples to him, Jesus said, "Truly I tell you, this poor widow has put more into the treasury than all the others. They gave out of their wealth, but she, out of her poverty, put in everything, all she had to live on." Now, it's a little bit hard to determine exactly what her financial status was. Jesus said she put in these two copper coins, and that was all she had to live on. That represented her life savings. Here's the problem with that. That wasn't enough to live on. It's like if I gave you two pennies and said, "Okay, now you can retire. Go and enjoy your retirement. Here are two pennies to live off of that." You'd say, "Can't make it very long." I mean, likely for this lady, her existence was very much a hand-to-mouth kind of existence. She had to rely on other people to get food, to be able to survive every day. Somehow, on this particular day, she came across these two small copper coins. They were given to her, or somehow she found these coins. We don't know. On this particular day, she had these coins in her possession. Those two coins would have represented maybe another meal for her. Maybe she could have gone and bought a small loaf of bread or enough food to maybe survive that day without having to ask anyone else, without having to depend on others to survive. But on this particular day, she decided that she wanted to be a part of what God was doing. She wanted to contribute to the temple treasury. And so on this day, she said, I'm willing to sacrifice. I'm willing to give something up because I want to go and to give. And here's what Jesus said. The others gave out of their wealth. Were they generous? Perhaps. Perhaps there were many that gave a lot. And they were percentage-wise. They gave a lot. But they had money still to live on. This woman had nothing. And yet what she had, she was willing to give. And so what Jesus is doing here is he is not trying to point his disciples to her economic condition. He is trying to show them the condition of her heart. And Jesus says, you want to see generosity? You want to see real generosity? Here it is. Look at what this lady just did. This is a generous person. That's what I want us to talk about today. As we look at this passage, we see some things both directly and indirectly that generosity is and that generosity is not. That's what I want us to see. Number one, generosity is a percentage, not an amount. I mean, that is the clearest thing from this passage. Generosity is a percentage, not an amount. And there were those who gave that day, and maybe they were generous, and they gave a certain percentage of their income. But as a percentage, this woman gave far more than any of them. Even though they gave lots of coins, and they made a lot of noise as they went into the shofar, and even though everyone else said, man, look how much they gave, this woman gave everything that she had. Generosity is about a percentage, not an amount. Throughout the Bible, God says, I want you to give according to what I've given to you. I want you to give not based on what others are giving, not comparing yourselves to what others are giving. I want you to give based on what I've given to you. And I want you to give not only based on what I've given to you in your money, but in your time, in your talents, and you know, your resources, in your position in life. Where I have placed you in life, what I expect out of you is based upon what I've given to you. And here we see this woman who woke up every day and said, God, I don't have much. She really don't. But God, I'm going to serve you today with what you've given me, whatever that means. And on this particular day, two coins, and she says, well, God, I can do something with this. I can be a part of what you're doing with what you've given to me. Katie and I have been married for about 13 and a half years, and right after we got married, we sat down and had that real fun budget discussion. It's always, you know, so exciting to sit down and talk about money, right? You know, not very romantic, but it's what every couple needs to do. And so we sat down and we came up with a budget. You know, all these line items in the budget. The very first line item in the budget we determined was that we were, wherever we were involved with whatever church we were involved with, we were going to give 10% of what we made to that church. And the reason was simple. We read our Bibles and we said, you know, this is what God said to do, and Jesus basically encouraged it. Jesus said you ought to do this, and we kind of figured that anyone who, you know, is raised from the dead knows what he's talking about. And so, you know, we said, okay, we're going to do this. Non-negotiable, 10%, first 10% goes to wherever we're involved. We've been involved in three churches over the course of our marriage, and so everywhere we've been, 10% has gone there. Over the course of our marriage, our income has gone up and down and up and down. We were first married, we both worked, and we had no kids. It was easy to give. You know, expenses were low, and both of us working, we had a fair amount of income coming in. You know, it was easy to give. Second year we were married, our income went to what is technically below the poverty level. Now, we still didn't have kids, so we could manage, we could do it, But our income dropped dramatically. And then the next year we were married, we were both working again, still no kids, income went way up again. Then we had kids, Katie quit working, I was the only one working, income went down again, and expenses with kids began to skyrocket. Over the course of our marriage, it has been like this. Our income has gone up and down. The actual amount that we have given to the churches that we have been involved with has gone like this, but the percentage has stayed the same. Throughout it all, we have said, God, you, whatever you have given to us, we're going to take that 10% and we're going to give it to you. Now, this week I sat down and I was writing this message and I began to think about this fact. This is just a little aside, interesting for you. If you were to look at our family budget, you'd have all these items. I don't know, 10 or 12 items listed in our family budget. Same one that's in yours. Housing, utilities, clothes, food, entertainment. You know, all these items listed in the family budget. As I went through and thought about each one of those line items, I thought, you know, we've had fights about every one of those. You know, should you really buy that outfit? I don't know. You know, do we have enough money in our clothing budget? You know, we're spending way too much on groceries. I know, well, it's not my fault. It's your fault. You know, we fought about that one. Entertainment, you know, should we really do this? Should we spend money on this? You know, I don't think we should do this. Even utilities. You know, I know you're hot, but turn down the air conditioning. You know, the electric bill is through. We have fought on every single category except the first one, except the tithe. That's the only area where we've not had a fight. So I am thankful for this whole tithe thing, because it's at least kept one fight out of our lives, you know, since we've been married. So generosity is a percentage, not an amount. Secondly, generosity is learned, not instinctive. It is something that is learned. It does not come naturally. Now, if you stop and think about it, you know this is true. If you do not know this is true, I invite you next week to volunteer in our two-year-old classroom. And you will learn this truth. You know, no two-year-old says, yeah, sure, I'll share my toy with this other two-year-old. Absolutely. In fact, I brought a whole bunch of my personal toys from home to Sunday school today to share with the entire class. Yeah, no two-year-old says that, right? They're not naturally generous. We have to teach them to share. We have to teach them about generosity, which means this. If this is something that you've just not done in life, you know, maybe you're new to church or you grew up in church, but this was never modeled for you. You were never taught giving, and it's just not something you've practiced. You've just not been taught. It's not like, well, you know, you should have known that. You just weren't taught this. I had a conversation years ago with a guy who was very involved in church and had been for several years, and somehow we were talking about this whole money issue, and he just said, you know, we don't give. He said, we've never really given much of anything to the church. And I said, why? And we kind of drilled down on it a little bit. And he talked about some bills and all that. But he was making more than me. And I said, man, you're making plenty of money. And he said, well, you know, I think it's just one of these things we've never done. He said, it wasn't modeled for me growing up. I just didn't really know about it. He said, we've just never really thought this was something that we should do. Generosity is something that you have to be taught, that you have to learn. And I will tell you, the best way to learn it is just to practice it. People who start giving, typically they will give for the rest of their lives. I've talked to lots of pastors. I've asked, you know, church leaders before about this. And they've said, oh yeah, typically people who are givers, they remain givers the rest of their lives. I mean, there are a few exceptions. There are times that someone has some kind of crisis and they have to stop for a period of time. But people who practice it, they get it and they typically do it forever. So generosity is something that is learned, not instinctive. Number three, generosity is more strategic than spontaneous. Generosity generally is planned. It's not spur of the moment. Most generous people I know are very strategic in their giving. And most generous people I know are not very emotional. They are not moved by emotional appeals. They do not get teary-eyed when the commercials come on with the dog shivering in the cold. And by the way, I hate those commercials. I've never understood why in the world they film that. Give the dog a blanket. Don't sit there with a camera and film that poor dog shivering. Most people are not moved by that who are generous. They don't pick up the phone and, with tears, say, well, now I must give. Now, they might do it, and certainly emotional appeals will, get them to give sometimes. But most emotional people I know, they don't give that way. They plan out their giving. They give consistently and strategically. And they might tweak it at the beginning of the year, or they might change it throughout the year, and they might give to things spur of the moment, but most of their giving is strategic. Several years ago, I came across an article on CNN's website about the Passion Conference that had happened in Atlanta the weekend before. If you're not familiar with the Passion Conference, it's this huge gathering of college students in Atlanta. They meet right after Christmas every year. Thousands of students from all over the United States, really all over the world. They have speakers. They have music the whole time. It's big, big Christian worship they have there. That particular year, it was at the Georgia Dome. I think now it's at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. But that year, it was at the Georgia Dome, located right next to CNN's headquarters. That year, their focus was on sex trafficking. And they talked about it, and they talked about how this next generation can make a difference, and they talked about things that they could do, practically speaking, to help in this awful thing called sex trafficking. And at the end of the week, they took up an offering for an organization that was fighting this evil. And so all these students gave, and there was a reporter from CNN who was outside of the Georgia Dome, and this reporter began to interview these students who had given, and they came across this one college student, this guy, and the reporter interviewed him and found out that he had given $100 towards this cause. And the reporter said, oh, that's great. And, this poor college student. And, think about how much that represents as far as, meals and extracurricular activities for the next 2 weeks or 3 weeks of his life. I mean, he was willing to sacrifice and give $100 towards this cause. And the article just said, isn't this great? This college student did that. And I thought, yeah, that's generous. That's wonderful. But then I started thinking about another college student. College student who is active in his church, works on his campus. He makes $200 a week working part-time on his campus. And growing up, he learned the principle of giving. He learned this whole tithing thing. And so he said, I'm making $200 a week. I'm going to give $20 to my church every week. And so over the course of a year, he gives $1,000 to his church. Over the course of 4 years, he gives $4,000 to his church. Money that goes to make a difference in the lives of students who are hearing the gospel. Money that goes to help those in the community who are suffering and poor. Money that goes to pay for the light bills so that worship services can happen. Money that goes so that ministry of that church can continue to happen. No CNN reporter will sit down with this guy and say, hey, what you're doing is really making a difference, but ultimately that guy is making more of a difference than the person who gave the $100 spontaneously at the end of the conference. Why? Because it's strategic. It's planned out over time. Most generous people I know are this way. They give in a very methodical, strategic, planned out way. Certainly they'll give spontaneously. Katie and I have done that over the years. People send letters or we'll get emails or we'll go to some kind of banquet. We'll give above what we normally give. But the majority of our giving is done very systematically. Okay, finally, here's the last thing. Generosity is about people, not about money. Generosity is, at the end of the day, about people, not about the amount that's given. Most generous people I know, they don't care whether they've given $100, $1,000, or $100,000. What they want to know is that the money that they have given is going to change lives. Several years ago, we had a couple in our church that had given a fairly large check to the church, and they gave it and they specified that money for something. And in case you don't know this, the IRS has these real strict regulations on any money that is given for a specific purpose. If it is given for that purpose, it can only be used for that purpose. So if you decided to give money towards buying purple flowers, we could only buy purple flowers with it. We could not buy blue or yellow or green flowers. We could only buy purple. And if the stores quit selling purple flowers, then that money would just have to sit in an account. We could not spend it if you said it's for purple flowers. Well, this couple gave this check. It was not for purple flowers. It was for something else. And they specified what it was for, and we were going to use it for that, but the language was a little bit tight on there, you know, the description. And so I called them, and I just explained this whole IRS rule. And I said, if we ever get audited, you know, and we spend just a little bit outside of the way you've specified it, we can get into real trouble. And I said, you know, would it be okay if we changed it? I think I used the purple flower illustration, you know, to help them understand. And they said, oh, yeah, we get it. And they said, absolutely. They said, the last thing that we want to do is to give this money and it just sit in some account and not be used for ministry. We want it to go so that people's lives will be changed. I mean, that's how the generous people I know are. It's not about the money. It's about people, and it's about changed lives. If you've been around here for a while, you know that I grew up in the Middle Georgia area. I was gone for about 13 years before I came back. I never thought I would come back. You know, it's a typical story, but you know, your hometown, it's got like this tractor beam that just kind of sucks you back in, you know. And so ended up coming back here, and now I think it's one of the greatest places in the whole world to live. You know, we're big enough to have things like several hospitals and an airport, but we're small enough that I don't have to spend half my life commuting, you know, back and forth to work. I mean, I think it's the perfect size city to live in. We love living here. Growing up here, my life was tremendously and forever impacted by the ministry of a church that is located at the corner of Pierce and Vineville Avenues. Now, if you leave from here and you go over to Forsyth Avenue and you go down Forsyth, eventually the road will get really weird. You'll have these three lanes, and sometimes you can drive in two of them and sometimes you cannot. And watch out, you know, if the X's above you change, you know, you can have a car coming at you just head on very fast. It's very confusing to people that are not from this area. Well, those lanes change, and you go a little bit further, and you will get to Pierce Avenue. If you look catty corner to your left, you will see a church there that looks like a big castle. It is a beautiful church and has beautiful stained glass windows. My life was forever changed by the ministry of that church. I learned spiritual truths because of the ministry of that church that have impacted my life and changed who I am and the direction of my life forever. I mean, I have gone to college, and I've, you know, gone and gotten my master's degree, and I went to the schools that people said I was supposed to go to learn the Bible, to get the degree, so a church like you would hire me and say, yes, you can come be our preacher. I mean, I went and did all of that, but in all of that schooling, none of those spiritual truths I learned impacted me like what I learned when I was at that church. Nothing impacted me as greatly as the ministry of that church. Now, at the time, I didn't think about it. I just thought, well, you know, the lights are on, the building is here, somebody cleans the building. I never stopped to think, well, you know, somebody has to pay for this. But looking back, I get it. The reason I was able to get that spiritual foundation was because people in that church believed in this principle. They wanted to impact lives. My guess is most of them weren't very rich. They had kids in high school, kids in college. They had bills they had to pay. But they believed in this principle. And so they gave. And I may never know who all of them are. I may never know names this side of eternity. I may never get to thank them. But they believed and they gave so that lights could be owned, so that staff members could be paid, so that insurance bills could be paid, so that boxes and boxes and mounds of pizza could be purchased for all the youth events, so that literature could be bought, so that all of these things could happen. They said, we are willing to give so that lives can be changed. And my life was forever changed because people believed in this principle. This is the greatest reason we have to give. Last week I talked about the reason that we give is because it changes us. And last week, if you were here, I held up this card and I challenged you. If you've never given before, then we would love for you to take a first step in giving and just for 6 weeks to give it a shot. And I said, hey, if you would fill out this card, put all this information on it, and then at the bottom, you can put your email address or you can put your text, your phone number, so that we'll send you a text message. And And I explained that none of this was anything that we were going to send you personal information like, you know, you've signed up, but you haven't given. You know, we're not going to do that. You're just getting devotions by doing this. And I explained last week, and if you've not had the chance to do it yet, you can do this today. You can fill this card out. You can check the box at the bottom. And I explained, just try it for 6 weeks. Just for 6 weeks, give it a shot. Because Jesus said, where your treasure goes, there your heart will go as well. If you will give for 6 weeks, I promise you, God will do something in your life. God will bless you in some way. You will grow closer to God through this experience. And I believe in it so much that I said, if that doesn't happen, if you do not feel like you have benefited in some way, then 6 weeks from now, you can call the church office and say, it did nothing for me. I would like a refund. Oh, just for these 6 weeks. You can get the money back that you gave over 6 weeks if you say, you know, God didn't come through, didn't do anything in my life. And so I challenge every one of us, if you've given just a little, give a little bit more. If you've been given like at the 5% rate, you know, try 6%. You know, 7%, try tithing. Try following the biblical principle of tithing. But for everyone, and if you're already tithing, you get it, you understand the joy of giving, then just fill out the card and say, yes, I want to be a part of what's going on here at the church. And so I plead with you, please, 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 because it will benefit your life. And that's reason number one. But the bigger reason is this. The bigger reason is that God is doing this beautiful thing and has this grand story that He invites us into to be a part of. And God says, look at all the incredible things that I'm doing. I want you to participate in my great, grand story. And one of the big ways you can participate is through the financial gifts that God has given to you to say, you know, I'm going to give a percentage of that back to God to see what God does with it. In this side of heaven, I may never know what God has done with what I've given. But when I get to heaven, I'll get to celebrate the lives that were changed and the way that people were impacted and people that were helped and all of those things. When we give, we get to step into the great story of God. And God gets to use whatever amount it is, small, medium, large, God gets to use that to do more than we can even imagine. To take those funds and say, I'm going to use these for eternal things. And we get the privilege of being able to step into that story and be a part of what God is doing.